We're continuing Megillat Rut, and for those who weren't with us last week, well, just remind ourselves what we saw. We had seen an overview of the Megillah, the story about a wealthy person, Elimelech, who went to Chutz Laaretz because of a famine, and his two sons married non-Jewish girls, and then he died, his two sons died, and his wife was left widowed, and her two daughters-in-law firstly followed, and then finally only one followed, and that one became Rus, who ultimately mothered King David and became one of the bastions of Jewish faith, one of the people who represent true gerim in Judaism, and where a person can attain, what heights a person can attain when a person truthfully wants to grow. Yeah.
I know we read Ruth observe Ruth on Shavuot, but what's that have anything to do with Shavuot?
So we'll get to that.
Executive of the Torah.
We'll get to that.
So
our Megillah is focused during a period called the period of the Shoftim. There's no king, there's no central leadership. Each tribe is within itself. There is a leader called the Shofet, and he does have certain powers like a king, but there's no dynasty and there's no central figure of leadership. The Shofet does have some position of leadership. He is guiding and teaching, and he does take us together to war, but there's still much anarchy. And we enter this period after we have conquered the land of Israel. And when we conquered the land of Israel, we entered that period after traversing the desert. And if we think about it, our history is dotted with gerim who helped us move forward. It begins with Avram, the father of all gerim. And then when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, so they're helped along with Yisro. And when the Jews enter the land of Israel, they are helped by Rachav. Rachav was one of the most beautiful women ever created. People would cross the lands for her services. And when she had the spies come into her home, she let them down with a rope. A red rope was assigned to her home. And she said, God, till now I used to have all kinds of improper relationships. Men would climb up this window. Kings would come from far and wide just to come up this window for me. And if I've sinned until now, so I have, and now I'm letting down the Jews and I'm going to help them out and forgive me. Let this repent for all that I've done, take me back. And Rachav not only came back, but she married Yoshua. She married the leader of the Jewish people. Yoshua's wife was Rachav. Look at how high up she was able to go. When a person really wants to come back and grow, so he can. The door's open. Even Rachav. Rachav, the Gemara says she was so beautiful that if a person would just say, Rachav, Rachav, he'd get wet. So the Gemara says, the person couldn't contain himself. Just saying her name, anyone that knew her would go crazy. That's how beautiful she was, and that's how much, I mean, how well known. Far and wide people would come to Rachav. But she did tshuva. And now we're going to learn about Rus. And we're focused on a period when there's poverty in the land of Israel, spiritual poverty. The people haven't been learning Torah or keeping the Torah, and this led to physical poverty. There's a famine. And there's a wealthy person named Elimelech, and he and his wife and his two kids, they're all thinking, we can't keep giving our money away to all these poor. And they pack their bags and they leave to Moab. And this is called Sarut Ain, to have a bad eye. They say there's Ain Tovain, Ain Ha'a. And it's interesting that there are four times that the Tanakh stresses to run after chesed. Because chesed is the type of thing which a person can do once, and he'll get tired of the second time. And he could do it twice, and he could get tired of it. There's no guarantee that a person won't get tired of doing chesed. Chesed is something which a person constantly has to train himself to run after. Not only to wait for it to fall on his lap. Well, now I know of this situation, I'll do it. No, a person has to seek out chesed. A person has to train himself to seek out chesed, because it's very easy to fall into this trap, which is where Elimelech and his wife and his two children fell. And it's unclear how much his wife was party to this, but it seems like she was. She was also punished. We say God is Hatzur Tamim Paolo. God is the rock that his actions are whole. And that means that when God punishes, so there's no such thing as an innocent bystander. If anyone was hurt by the punishment, then they deserved that hurt. The story goes that a king was going to put to death a famous robber. They finally caught the bandit. And he says, does anyone have anything good to say about this person? And a boy walks forward and he says, yeah, he's my dad. And maybe he deserves to be killed, but I don't deserve to be an orphan. So in human justice, we can't make everyone happy. We can't do what's fair for everyone. It's true. What did the kid do wrong? What does he deserve to lose a father? But God isn't bound by that. And when something happens, so anyone that's affected by it, they deserve to be affected by it. That's why the Baalei Mussar would always say, you have to have a lot of friends. Because if you have a lot of friends, then if something bad happens to that person, then all his friends hurt for him. And hopefully one of those friends don't deserve that hurt. And God will say, okay, I can't do that to this person yet. That person that's going to know about it, he doesn't deserve to be hurt by it. So if Naomi was hurt, she lost her husband, then obviously she deserved that as well. So Elimelech, who was one of the leaders, packed his bags and left. And he left to Moab, which is the people who exemplify this, that they personify this midah of not helping other people. When the Jews were traveling, they boycotted them. And Chazal tell us, because he adopted this trait, so God sought it that his children couldn't find the shidduch. You go out to Moab, what kind of girls could you marry? So they ended up marrying Moabite girls. And this is something to think about. All the people, almost everyone here is single. Wherever you're going to work, wherever you're going to go to college, you have your future years in front of you. One of the things you have to factor in is, are there Jewish girls around? I had a friend who went out to Be'er Sheva. In the middle of the desert, he was going to medical school. He said, it's very nice. But at one point we were talking, he says, you know, there are no Jewish girls around. So that's a problem. So here in Israel, it's a little bit, okay, Jewish. You're right. I'm sorry. In this case, it was Jewish, but not religious. Told me everyone around me is not religious. I'm the only one Shomer Shabbos in my class. So you're right. In his case, it was Jewish, but it still wasn't girls he was going to marry. You go to college out in Binghamton, so how many religious girls are there? So they have a good hillel. There are some religious people there, but preferably a person should try to choose a college and a workplace where he's going to be, where he's going to find it easy. We deal with shidduchim and we get these phone calls all the time. People who got stuck in a workplace somewhere where there are no religious girls. And another factor is that girls don't want to travel there either. And even if they say, yeah, I'll come in for the dates. It's not so simple. So here in Israel, it's easier. But still, it affects a person who's around him. And Elimelech went to Moab and Ammon, and God said, well, if you're adopting their traits of not wanting to give others, then that's who your children are going to marry. So after 10 years, Elimelech passes away, and his two children pass away, and they are childless. And this shows us how much patience God has. God didn't kill them all right away. Sometimes we do things and we say, oh, this is a sign that God didn't like what I'm doing because something failed right at the start. Or this is a sign that God did like what I'm doing because it succeeded at the start. And things don't work that way. We don't live in a world where it's God exacts justice at every moment. A person could do what's right and things will be tough. A person could do what's wrong and things will be sweet. That's not a way to measure things. After 10 years, so then they were punished, and finally Elimelech died and his two children died, and now Naomi remains alone with her two daughters-in-law. Now these two daughter-in-laws were two princesses, Moabite princesses. Rus was the daughter or the granddaughter of Eglon, the king of Moab, and Arpah was also the daughter of a king. So these two princesses had married into their family. That shows us how wealthy Elimelech was, that kings would want their daughters marrying into the family. And after 10 years of not having any children, they still didn't get the hint, and they lost their wealth, and the two husbands died. Now these two daughter-in-laws, they said to Naomi, we're with you. It's interesting that Machlon comes from the word Mechila. Machlon is one who has a lot of Mechila. And in the end, God forgave him for what he did, and that's why Machlon's wife was Rus, who ultimately married Boaz, who had a child. And that child, why was Boaz marrying her? To continue the name of the deceased, right? That was the whole purpose. That's the whole idea of Yibum. That we marry the, what?
What does
Machlon mean? Machlon stems from the word forgiveness, one who attains forgiveness. And Chilion comes from the word klaya, to be wiped out. And that's really what happened to Chilion. After he died, his wife went back and married Philistines, and his wife had children that didn't maintain his name. His wife had Goliath came from Arpah. But not from Chilion, from Arpa's later marriages. So Mahlon and Chilion both pass away. And it seems like they were older. So long as a child is under bar mitzvah, so in heavens he's considered collateral for the father. He doesn't get punished for his sins, but he might get punished for his father's sins. And that's why when a child becomes bar mitzvah, so the child says the blessing, Baruch Ata Hashem Lokeinu Melech Olam Shepterani Meon Shel Zeh. Blessed are you Hashem that you now made me free of having my father's punishment. And today we go with the other understanding in the Medrash, and that's today the custom that we say, Baruch Shepterani Meon Shel Zeh, the father says it. When a child becomes bar mitzvah, and this blessing is based in the Medrash, most today say it without God's name. They just say Baruch Shepterani, not Baruch Tashem Lokeinu Melech Olam. So Mahlon and Chilion, it seems, were old. I mean, they were married for 10 years, so they didn't die for their father's sin. Now they were held accountable. And the Medrash says that you don't make a move with the family if someone protests. If Naomi would have said, "I'm going to be miserable in Chutz Aretz, I want to stay in Israel," Elimelech wouldn't have gone. If Mahlon would have said, "I'm not going to have any friends, I don't want to move, I can't go to a new neighborhood, speak new languages," Elimelech wouldn't have gone. If Chilion would have piped up and said, I can't handle going out there, there are no Jewish girls, who am I going to marry? It's not going to work for me," he wouldn't have moved. And that's why they were all held accountable for the move. That's why they were all punished. But this also gives us a little bit of insight as to when we're contemplating a move, how much we have to take the family into account. A person can't say, "This is where it's going to work for me." It also shows us how when a person adopts a bad trait, he can easily give it over to the rest of the family. Everyone feels the attitude that's prevalent in the home. When someone knocks on the door for tzedakah, if we say, "Oh, it's another one of those," so the kids catch on to that. If we say, "Oh, poor guy, I wish we could help him," and that's what the halacha says, that if a person asks for tzedakah and you can't give him money, you have to at least give him over the feeling that you'd love to help him. Give him at least that feeling that you feel bad, you can't help him. And that's halacha, it's in the laws of tzedakah. So you treat him in, you invite him, you talk to him, you try to comfort him, you try to help him, and you say, "Bottom line, I'm sorry, I can't help you." You don't have to give everyone that knocks on the door, but you do have to treat him nicely, and the question is, what message do you give your children? So here we see that the whole house had this trait that, okay, there are people out there who need money, and we need to maintain our own wealth, so we got to leave. Now, this was a generation where the judges were more corrupt than the people. Shvota Shoftim, everyone was judging the judges. It was a period where people were looking at the judge and saying, "You're going to judge me? You cheat on your taxes more than me. You're going to tell me I should pay my taxes? You're telling me to give back something small? You stole something bigger." The judges were more corrupt than the people. And what? So, there was no Torah and no guidance, and that led to a situation where there was no food. And the Megillah stresses each one's name, Elimelech, his wife, his two children, to tell us that each one was for leaving Eretz Yisrael. Elimelech passed away and left behind orphans. We have a tradition that if a person tries to skimp on giving other people and helping other people, then in heavens, the punishment for that is that he leaves behind orphans that will need help from other people. And that's why Elimelech left behind these orphans. When a person tries to skimp and not help other people when he could, so then that's a tradition we have, that's the punishment for that in heaven. So Naomi hears that things are getting better in Israel, so she wants to go back. And her two daughter-in-laws follow her. And Naomi tells them, "Go back." Naomi's embarrassed. Naomi used to be so wealthy that the maids in her father's house would wear the finest embroidery when they'd go out to draw water. Everyone would look at the embroidery that the maids were wearing, riding their camels to draw water. Naomi was so wealthy that all of Beis Lechem, which is a pretty wealthy area, would borrow her jewelry for weddings. She had jewelry to lend everyone. And now Naomi, who people used to say about her, she was so beautiful that she would make the jewelry look pale next to her beauty. Now Naomi has to come back. She doesn't even have shoes on her feet. She's totally impoverished with these two non-Jewish daughter-in-laws. And so Naomi tells them, "Go back." She just thinks of the scene of her coming back with them. She tells them, go back. And they say, no, we want to go with you. And she tells them, go back to your mother's home. Why is she stressing your mother's home? Because in halacha we say that when we speak to someone who's Jewish, so we assume that the father is the father and the mother is the mother. But when we speak to someone who's not Jewish, then we assume the mother is the mother, and that's all. So that's why she told them, go back to your mother's home. Go back home. And may Hashem do kindness for you, just as you did with the dead. She didn't even have money to buy the garments that we bury the dead, the shards. She didn't have the money to bury them. And they helped her. They sustained her. Why is she telling them, may Hashem do kindness with you? Because we have a tradition that when it comes to the Jewish people, God doesn't do kindness to them in this world. If we do good things, God says, I'm going to hold it for you in the world to come. When it comes to the non-Jews, God says, anyone that God doesn't like, He says, I'm giving you your merits in this world. So if a person has it easy in this world, he has to wonder, is it a good sign? It's not always a good sign. Even by Jews, if a person likes a person, if God doesn't like a person, then He makes it easy for him in this world. So Naomi told them, look, the way the world is, that you guys should have the kindness for what you did now in this world. So go and may you each get married and find comfort. They all cry. They say, no, we're with you. And then the second time, Naomi says, what are you coming back for? I can't give you husbands. What are you going to wait for them? You're going to... that's ridiculous. They all cry. And Orpah gives her a kiss and leaves. They used to quote this by the Oslo Peace Accords. Arafat used to kiss a lot. So they always used to say, Orpah is the one that kissed. She kissed and kissed us goodbye. And went on to bring Goliath to the world who tried to destroy the Jewish people. Rus didn't need to kiss. Rus stuck to us. When someone sticks to you, they don't have to kiss to show they're sticking to you. They're with you. So Orpah gives her a kiss and leaves. And goes on to marry Philistines and mother children who ultimately fought King David. Not only Goliath, the other children, Ishmadon. Yeah. And Rus says, no, I'm with you. Now, it's interesting to note that Megillus Rus has all the psukim beginning with the letter Vav. Every pasuk in Megillus Rus begins with the letter Vav, aside from 8. And this is to signify that Rus joined the people who perform a bris milah on the 8th day. She joined the Jewish people. And the reason that it's the letter Vav is because the Megillah is stressing Vay. Woe to a generation that its great people are impoverished. Rus, we're going to see Rus is impoverished. And this is one of the main themes of the Megillah. The state of poverty of Rus and Naomi, that they're walking back in shrouds. They don't have shoes for their feet. They're walking back and they're so poor that they're walking back on Pesach. They're making this journey back to the land of Israel on the first day of Pesach. They enter Beis Lechem on the first day of Chol HaMoed, meaning they made their journey on Pesach. So they were at a state where they had nothing to eat. They were coming back, it was Pikuach Nefesh. That's the main theme of this Megillah. And according to one understanding, that's why we read it on Shavuos. To remind us that the Torah wasn't given to a wealthy people. The Torah was given to us so that we will learn it in a state of poverty. If one wants to succeed in Torah, he can't think that he's going to attain it together with wealth. If one is looking for physical wealth in this world, well, he won't attain Torah with it. Torah only comes to those that are willing to forgo the physical in this world, those that are willing to be poor like Rus and Naomi. Naomi is now going to tell Rus, go back to your father's house. You have all the wealth in the world there. Your father is a king. Why should you come with me? And Rus starts crying. Rus tells her, I beg you, I'm a princess. I'm the daughter of great people. I want to stick to you. I think that if I stay with you, then I'll attain your world, and I want to attain that world. I can't go back to my family and to their idol worship. That's not for me. So Rus is willing to forgo kingdom. She could be the next queen. She's the daughter of a king. And she's willing to forgo all of that because she wants to stick to Naomi. And Naomi tells her, you know what, if you come with me, we have situations on Shabbos, you can't walk more than 2,000 footsteps out of a city. You know, that's limiting. So Rus says, I'll go where you go. She tells her, you know, we have a concept of yichud. You're not allowed to be alone in the same room with another man when you're single, and certainly when you're married. And Ruth says, I'll sleep where you sleep. I'm not going to be alone. We're not allowed to be alone. She says, you're not allowed to marry many people. You're not allowed to marry your nephew. You're not allowed to marry your brother. Your what? So she tells her, I'm one of these people. She tells her, you're not allowed to serve idols. She says, your God is my God. You know, if you transgress, the court has the right, has four different forms of death. She says, I'm going to behave like you, I'm going to die like you. She says, you know, that even when a person dies, so there are different burial plots. If he's killed by the court, he's in a special derogatory space. She says, I'll be buried with you. She says, maybe you think that I'll lead you to another family and you'll be able to get married there. She says, no, just like happened until now, I'm going to go on this way of life like I am till now, I'm with you. And when Naomi saw that she's crying and begging her to go with her, so Naomi finally, her compassion takes over and she says, fine, come. And her mother-in-law, Naomi is her mother-in-law. So Ruth tells her, please, don't hurt me, don't insist that I leave. So they're going together, and the pasuk automatically equates them. Vatelachna shtehem, the two of them went, and this is to show us how much God loves gerim. The second Rus decided, I am becoming a ger. The pasuk equates her with Naomi. Now they're equals. She hasn't yet become a ger, but the pasuk says shtehem, both of them. The pasuk equates them, and they come to the city of Beis Lechem. And when they come to the city of Beis Lechem, the whole city is shocked. Is that Naomi, the one who always used to lend us her jewelry? Is that Naomi who's so impoverished now? So, well, how did everyone gather to see her? So, God made it that Boaz's wife passed away, and everyone was gathering together the first day of Chol HaMoed. They're going to bury Boaz's wife. Now, Boaz is the leader. He's the chief rabbi. He's the shofet. And his wife passed away. He's a widow, a widower. So, everyone gathered together to go and bury her. They're on their way with the funeral procession, and they bump into Naomi. So now everyone in town, it's like walking into shul when everyone turns around in the chadodi. You walk in, everyone turns around to face you. You guys ever have that? No, you guys are all on time. Okay, you don't know that. Sometimes that could happen. So that's what happens to Rus and Naomi. They're walking into town, and suddenly all of town's walking towards them. And in one shot, everyone said, well, what's going on here? And they realized, oh, she went to Chutzarts. That's what happened to her. They were on their way to bury, yeah. And Naomi says, don't call me Naomi, call me bitter, because God has made everything very bitter for me. I deserve it, but God did it to me. When I left, I was even pregnant with another child, and I was so wealthy, and now God brought me back empty. Don't call me Naomi. God has testified against me. God has found me faulty. God has found my sin, you see. That's what God did to me. And Naomi and Rus come back to the land of Israel, and they're there from the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, and people are starting to harvest. We know the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach is when we bring the Omer, and then it's permissible to start cutting the wheat. So the harvest begins. Now, our sages taught us that all punishments are difficult, but the most difficult of all is poverty. There's a medrash that says that before Eov got all the physical punishments that he got, he was offered from heaven, what do you prefer? Poverty? Or to have the boils and all your your house destroyed and bad dreams at night, but you won't be totally impoverished. And Eov said, I'd rather suffer all the sufferings but not be totally impoverished. And Chazal taught us that the worst thing a person can suffer is to be totally impoverished. When a person can't afford to eat a piece of bread, he's got nothing, that's the worst. So Naomi and Rus are at the bottom. Now, Naomi's husband had a cousin who was also a really, really good friend of his, and his name is Boaz. He's the chief rabbi, and he was a big Talmud Chacham. So Rus tells her mother-in-law, why don't I go and collect what we're allowed to collect? I learned that there's the poor are allowed to collect the corner of the field, peah. If he forgets a bundle in the field, so one or two bundles he has to leave for the poor. If he drops a stalk or two stalks, so the poor are allowed to take that. Let me go collect that. Like a chick hunteya. So Naomi says, fine. Now, what's Ruth telling her? Better that than have to go around panhandling. And that's what our sages taught us. The person should never allow himself to come to a state where he has to go and ask people for other things. Pshot nevelot bashuk, Chazal told us, rather stand and do the most derogatory job, just skinning carcasses in the street, which is was in their time like the garbage collector, the most menial job, and don't have to come to asking other people for money. Person, so Rus says, let me go, this I'm entitled to. Legally, he's not allowed to take it. Legally, this belongs to the anim. So the halacha says that Baal Bayis shows up in his field three times a day in order to define the sections where the anim are going to collect from. The poor are allowed to follow the harvesters and collect the stalks that fall. But what about the corner of the field? Who defines what the corner? You could give this size corner, that size corner. So how much are you going to give? Everything can be a corner practically. As long as you leave something over, practically anything could be a corner. So the Baal Bayis has to define when, what and when is going to be given to the anim. So Boaz used to show up at the field, and it's set times. He has to show up at set times so that there were times when the children could make it and collect their food, so the Baal Bayis had to show up then. There were times when the elderly could make it. There were times when the mothers who had finished nursing could make it. Chazal set up the times when he has to show up at his field so that the poor wouldn't have to wait around all day. They'd know when's the time that they could get the tzedakah, the stuff they were entitled to. Now, Rus wants to know her way back home, and Rus is very modest. Chazal say that she was covered from head to toe. When Boaz showed up to the field, so he starts speaking to the guys working there, and they say, look, we don't know if she can talk or she can't. She hasn't said a word since she came here. We don't know what she looks like. She's covered head to toe. You haven't seen a finger of hers from her hand to her toes. We haven't seen a finger. All we know is that she shows up to the field in the morning, and she collects, and she knows the halacha. She's in keeping with the halacha. What she's entitled to, she takes. If three stalks falls down, she doesn't touch it. She knows she's not allowed to take it. And we know, and Boaz sees, she acts intelligently. That she sits on the side, modestly, and when something falls, a stalk. You have wheat grows on a stalk, and then you have the kernels, right? You have bundles of kernels. So when some kernels or stalk would fall down, she'd go and pick it up. That she was entitled to. She'd stay back from fights. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, you're not allowed to collect with tools because they were scared. If one guy's going to come with a hatchet, I'm just cutting off the corner of the field. No, you got to do it by hand, because if the poor would have tools, they'd be killing one another. So it wasn't a pretty sight, and yet Rus held her own, but did it modestly. So the Boaz comes to the field, and he sees Rus has made signs to identify markers how to get back home. And everyone else would collect when it was time that the poor were allowed to enter the field. They'd collect as they went along. And Rus would go to the end of the field and collect on her way back, so that when she has the heavy pile, she's ready at the entrance to the field. If you're collecting as you're going through the field, so it gets heavier and heavier, and then you have to carry the whole load back. Rus was intelligent. She went the other way. Rus, when she bent down, she'd bent down modestly. She'd bend her knees and bend down. She wouldn't just bend her back and bend down, even though it would take a second more to get it, and maybe someone else would get it. She was careful to be modest in the way she collected, in the way she behaved. So Boaz sees this exceptional girl, and he asks the lad, whoa, this is, we don't usually have people behaving like this here. Who is this? And the kid tells him, don't worry, you can't marry her. She's not from Beis Lechem. She's a Moabite girl. And she came back with her mother-in-law, and she figures she's going to collect. Must be that's what she's figuring, because we haven't heard a word from her. She's been here since the morning. So Boaz tells Rus, do me a favor, don't go anywhere else. I want you to stick around here. And Rus gets scared. What's going on here? Who is this guy? Why is he talking to me? Boaz tells her, you look out for what's going on. I told the lads they're not allowed to touch you, so you don't have to worry. We see what kind of generation it was. When Boaz tells her, I commanded the lads not to touch you, so we see that he had to tell them something. Otherwise, she had to be careful. And when she comes home and tells this over to her mother-in-law says, stick with that field, don't go anywhere else. when you're thirsty, it tells you you could go and take from what the lands draw, the water they draw. And she bows down and she says, well, why did I find favor? What are you giving me special treatment? I'm not even from the Jewish nation. I'm from the girls of Moab. I'm from a people who are not fit to marry into the Jewish people. And Boaz tells her, no, I've been told. I know what you've done. And I know that God didn't decree on the females, you are allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So here we see that Ruth became a Gioris with the thought that she would never get married again. She was saying, I'll give up married life, I'll give up having children, but this is the way I have to go. This is the truth, this is where I'm going. And Boaz now, in this conversation, Boaz tells her, no, you're allowed to marry into the Jewish people, and this is going to be a recurring issue until David HaMelech's time. Even David HaMelech, people are going to speak about him. He can't really be king. He can't really marry into the Jewish people. He comes from Rus. Only in David HaMelech's time do the court settle the matter. But Boaz had a tradition, and he tells her, no, you're allowed to. And Boaz already sees in prophecy that he tells her, I want you to know you're going to have kings and prophets for all the kindness that you've done with your mother-in-law. You've sustained her after your husband died. You left your nation, your people, your father's house, and where you grew up, and you came here to become a Geret and live with a nation that you didn't know previously.
Before we spoke about that, he didn't know who she is. Now suddenly he knows everything.
The lad told him.
How can the lad know?
So I guess people were talking. It seems, I remember seeing a Midrash. I don't remember if I saw it this year. I remember seeing a Midrash that says that she was still dressed in the Moabite garb. She didn't have money to buy anything else, so she was recognizable that she was...
She just had one dress, and Naomi, her mother, said, when you go out to the field, world of death, or something to be modest in a way. She just had one dress.
Okay. So...
When she was going out to see.
That was later, right?
But,
yeah.
I remember hearing maybe something wrong, but she had maybe initially at some point she didn't have a problem walking, you know, with guys because she didn't know any better. Is there anything like that?
Yeah.
I can't remember you even saying that actually.
So we'll see. We'll get to that. So. Boaz tells her, stick around. God should pay you back for all the kindness that you've done, and may you have complete repayment from Hashem, the God of Israel, that you have come to become a ger under his wings. And in that merit, you should have a portion with Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. So he gives her a blessing. So Boaz is treating her nicely. And we see the seedlings of her salvation. When did they walk into Israel? The first day of Chol HaMoed. We're entering the period of Sfiras HaOmer. When does the Megillah take place? The Megillah begins with, we don't know when, story of Elimelech. But the focus of the Megillah is now going to take place within the next 49 days. Between Pesach and Shavuos is when the main story of the Megillah takes place, as we will see in a minute. So, Rus tells Boaz, now I find favor in your eyes, you have comforted me, you told me I could marry a Jew, and you promised me a portion in the world to come, and I don't really have any merits to have a portion in the world to come, not even with one of your maids, I won't even get portion in the world to come. And Boaz tells her, look, when the time for the meal comes, I want you to come forth, take from the food, take from the vinegar. And she sits on the side, and he gives her some roasted kernels, which is sweet like ganache, and she eats, and she's satiated, and she leaves over to bring back home for her mother-in-law. She gets up to gather everything, and after she leaves, Boaz tells the lads, hey, help her out. And they tell Boaz, she's so modest, we can't. She's not going to accept anything. So Boaz says, okay, so leave behind, make believe you forgot, whenever you're next to her, drop stuff, make sure that she walks away with enough. So I heard this past Shabbos two beautiful stories. A guy didn't know who Rav Moshe Feinstein was. So he made the trek out to MTJ. And in MTJ there were a lot of old people who used to, still today, you walk into the Beis Medrash, there are a lot of old people there. And he once, what? MTJ, Masiftet Tiferes Yerushalayim. That's where Rav Moshe Feinstein used to teach. So this person comes, and he comes early for davening, and he figures, by the time davening is over, I'll know who Rav Moshe Feinstein is. And he wanted to go over and say Shalom Aleichem. So he's there all of davening. There are a lot of old people standing in the front, and he can't figure it out. So at the end of davening, he walks over to someone in the back, and he says, could you tell me, please, who Rav Moshe Feinstein is? So the guy points to a short man sitting in the front with a white beard, and says, that's Rabbi Feinstein. And the Jew who asked turns pale. He says, oh, no. So he asks him, what's wrong? So he says, well, I came this morning for davening, and that man you just pointed to, he walked up to me and he stuck out his hand. So I took out a quarter and put it in it. So the guy asked him, what did he do? So he says, oh, he naturally took it, put it in his pocket, and kept walking. So think about it. Think what that means. That means that Rav Feinstein was on the ball. Like, in 1 second, he realized, what's the best way not to embarrass this person? So he took the quarter for him, he put it in his pocket. He didn't want to embarrass the person. There's Moshe Rubin. Oh, so because you're saying that, Moshe Rubin is my wife's uncle. So he told this story to another uncle, his brother, Yaakov Tzvi Rubin, who said it over this past Shabbos. So he has another story. He used to help Rabbi Feinstein. And they were once climbing the steps, and one of the guys calls up to my wife's uncle. He calls up and says, hey, Moshe. So he finds Feinstein and says, yeah. It was Moshe Feinstein. But in his mind, if someone else is saying, hey, Moshe, it could be him just as well. He didn't view it the way you're saying. There are many stories like that about him. There's another story that he quoted this Shabbos. Also, I don't think it's written anywhere. That a guy came over to him and said, I have a question. My son, it's unclear if he's a lefty or a righty. Does this with his left hand, this with his right hand? How should he put on his tefillin? On his left hand or his right hand? Should he put it on like a lefty or like a righty? So Rabbi Feinstein said, oh, that's a difficult question. I'll get back to you. Give me your phone number, I'll get back to you. So the guy, this was a Talmud Chacham, the one who asked the question. So he said, no, I'll call the Rashiva back. He said, no, I have to think about it. I'll call you back. And the guy tries insisting, no, I'll call back. And he says, no, I have to call you back. So he takes down his number, and it's 5 minutes before candle lighting time, and Rabbi Feinstein calls him up and tells him he should put on his tefillin like a righty. So the guy says, yeah. So he says, yeah, that's after researching, that's not lucky. So the person tells his son, you're putting on tefillin like a righty, fine. They hang up the phone, he's rushing 5 minutes before candle lighting, no one has time. A few years later, he mentions this story to someone. He says, you know, I had a really weird thing with Rabbi Feinstein. I don't get it. It wasn't such a complicated question that he had to go home and do all the research. And why did he call me back? Well, what's going on? So the person told him, he says, you know, I happen to have been in the office when your question came up, and I know what the whole story is. Your son had a limp, and he felt a limp. He used to limp, and he felt very strange among all his friends, because wherever he walked, people would look at him because he had a limp. And when you came to Rabbi Feinstein with the question, he knew that halachically there's very strong foundation for, in his case, for putting it on like a lefty and like a righty. And he knew how he would rule, but he also knew that because your son felt strange among everyone else, he should go with the halachic opinion to put it on like a righty. So he shouldn't feel strange that on this point he should feel like he's like everyone else. And he knew that you're a Talmud Chacham, and if he tells you this halacha, you'll start arguing with him and you won't buy it. You'll say, no, my son, really, it doesn't matter. So what did he do? He asked you for a phone number, and he figured 5 minutes before candlelight, you won't have time to argue with him. So he called you back 5 minutes before candlelighting, and so the man says, but he was wrong. my son really wouldn't mind. I'm telling you, he wouldn't mind. So the guy says, how much you want to bet? Let's call your kid over. So they call the kid over. He's already 18, 20 years old. And they asked him. And the kid said, you don't know, I was shivering. When my father went to ask Rabbi Feinstein, I was standing there praying he should say I should put it on like a righty. Every day I had to be weird in front of everyone. I said, and this, let me be normal. And one thing. So you see, even the father didn't catch his son. And this is how much a person has to think through. And one second, when someone came to him and asked him the question, he thought it through. I can't answer him now. I have to tell him I'll get back to him. I have to take down his number. And he already realized, hey, his son has a limp. To think through all these details to answer him the correct answer. So Boaz over here is taking into account what's going to make this girl feel well. I can't tell her, go to my guys and take food. I can't tell her, go, I'll give you. She doesn't want that. Her whole point in coming to collect from the field is that she doesn't want to feel like she's taking favors. This is what she's entitled to halachically. So Boaz tells the lads, you guys, when you walk by, you're drop stalks. Forget bundles next to her. And be gentle with her. Don't forget where she's coming from, Boaz tells them. This is a princess you're dealing with. She's standing here collecting. You're seeing her in tatters. This is a princess. She grew up in a king's house. She's not used to this. You have to take that into account when you're dealing with her. Boaz tells him, be careful how you talk to her. Veloti garuba, don't talk to her roughly. She's not like any other person here collecting. She's, remember where she's coming from. All of this is how a person has to behave when he's dealing with someone else. He has to factor in, where's the person coming from? Where is he today? What's the best possible way that I could be nice to him? And when it's time to go home, she has this huge pile. And she comes home to her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law says, what's going on here? Who did this? Whoever recognized you should be blessed. And she tells her mother-in-law everything that happened.
Why is it
hurtful? So, we have a few things here. Her mother-in-law tells her, who did you do this kindness to today? And from here we derive that when one gives tzedakah, the ani is doing kindness to the one who's giving tzedakah. Meaning, ordinarily we think, hey, if I'm giving the dollars, I'm doing the tzedakah, I'm doing the act of kindness. And Chazal taught us that the one who's accepting the tzedakah is doing more kindness than the one who's giving. He doesn't have to accept. When he accepts, he's allowing you to do one of the greatest mitzvahs. That's one of the opinions why we don't make a blessing on giving tzedakah. Because you never know, maybe he won't accept. Maybe he'll give it back. I've already had time. I want to give someone a shekel. He said, you only give me a shekel, take it.
Yeah.
I've had that.
Throw it back.
Right, okay. He doesn't have to accept it. I can't give him more, but he doesn't have to accept it. So he didn't let me do the mitzvah, okay. So Naomi tells Ruth, who's the one that you did this kindness to today? And Ruth tells her, and she tells her, stick with him. Be careful, because there are other people out there who you have to be careful of. And this is one of the things that people today tend to overlook. People think if you're frum, you have to be stupid. It doesn't work that way. The halacha teaches us that you have to be cautious, you have to be wary. One of the things that the pasuk says in Mishlei is, latet liftaim oma. One of the things the Torah is supposed to give us is cunning. Person can't close his eyes from what's going on in this world. And when Naomi guides Rus, Naomi tells her, there are people who behave improperly out there. You're a good-looking girl. You can't go to any field. One of the things a person has to do when he's teaching his children is also to teach his daughters how to be careful. You don't want to create a phobia. On the other hand, you do have to teach your children a little bit about being careful and being careful of people who are menaces and people who are not going to act properly. And that's what Naomi tells Rus. Now, Rus should know enough by now. But Rus might be like many people who just entered Judaism and think, well, if he's Jewish, then he's not going to try to con me as a taxi driver. No, wrong. It doesn't work that way. Judaism is the ideal. Jewish are the people. The people are supposed to live up to the ideal, but no one's guaranteeing that they do. You're in a Jewish state. Very good. That doesn't mean you aren't going to have taxi drivers trying to con you out of your money. And that shouldn't make you feel like, oh, everything's a lie. It's all a farce. No. The Torah is true, and it's unfortunate that not everyone lives up to it. And that shouldn't turn us down. That should make us strive more to be better people and help other people be better people. But we don't have to be fools. So Naomi tells Ruth, stick with that field. Don't go to other fields, because you should know there are other people out there who are not going to be so proper to you. Sometimes when we see someone acting beautifully, we like to think, oh, everyone else is beautiful. The Jewish people are all great. Everyone's all nice. Everyone's honest. Everyone is out to do good. Okay, we should be that way. We should aspire to be that way. We aren't yet that way. So we have to recognize that we aren't yet that way. So Rus tells her, yeah, and he said, stick to my lads till we finish the harvest. And Naomi tells her, it's a good idea. You stick with his girls. That's what you guys mentioned before, that she was coming from a place where it was common. You're with girls. You're with guys. She's a girl. She's with guys. Fine. As modest as she is, that still that sensitivity she didn't have. And Naomi teaches her that sensitivity in passing. And that's important. Sometimes we try to knock someone over the head. We can't do that. A person can grow slowly, one point at a time, slowly. So Naomi tells her, no, you go, you stick with his girls. And she sticks with them till they finish the harvest, which brings us to Shavuos. And now Naomi tells her, I want you to find a place where you can rest. I want things to work out for you. Boaz, who's our relative, that you were in his field, he's gathering, he's getting ready to winnow, to finish with the crops, and I want you to go down to him. Wash yourself, immerse yourself, go to the mikveh, put on your good perfume, put on your nice clothing, and go down to the granary. Wait till he finishes eating and drinking. Wait till he finishes learning his Torah. When a person goes to sleep at night, a person is supposed to end his day with Torah. A person's satiation after the meal is supposed to be with Torah. Ibn Ezra has a nice way of saying it, that you go to sleep with pleasant thoughts about the Torah, and you wake up and you immediately come back to the Torah. When you'll get engaged, you'll see that's how it goes. When you're really excited over someone, so the last thing you think about before you fall asleep is that person, and the first thing you think about when you wake up is that person, and that's what it's supposed to do with the Torah. So, what? That's a good question. You could get back to us when you get engaged. Let us know. So she tells him, when he lies down, go and uncover his feet and go lie down next to him. Now, why is Boaz sleeping by his money? Because there are thieves around. And Boaz is protecting his money. So he's learning at night, but he's learning by his money. He doesn't want the thieves to take his stuff. And that was a generation where thievery was rampant. So Ruth says, I'll do whatever you say. And Ruth doesn't do what she says. Ruth says, if I'm going to walk around with beautiful clothes, people are going to think, oh, nice woman, walk around with beautiful clothes in the evening. They're going to think wrong things about me, and I don't want to encounter people thinking wrong things about me. So, yeah.
I don't know. To me, it sounds a bit strange that someone who comes to the Jewish people, who's going to prove you are, who's behaving until the last moment very modestly, and somewhere the behavior changed, and she lay next to Boaz.
So Boaz is responsible to marry her. Okay. It's Boaz's job, halachically, to marry her. He's supposed to marry her because he's a relative who's supposed to continue the family of Machlon, of Chilion.
But why would she still have to do that?
Okay, so that, I don't know if we're going to get to deal with tonight. We'll get to that. I don't know if we'll get to that tonight. We'll get there. So, I don't know, I think maybe one of your classes on Shavuos night will deal with it. And if not, remind me of the Mizach and we'll try to deal with it. So, we have a question, which we're going to leave hanging, which is, why do it in this fashion? Why is it that they don't come straight forward and say, hey Boaz, this is your job, let's do it. We're going to add a question to that if we're already posing questions. Why isn't Boaz taking the initiative? Boaz knows what's going on. Why does she have to take the initiative? And we'll add a third question. If she was a non-Jew, then her marriage to Chilion wasn't really a marriage. So then why does Boaz have any responsibility to take her? What kind of marriage was that? I mean, that's a marriage that you have to continue. She becomes a ger. She's a new person. So we have three big questions that are at the basis of understanding this. But being that we have only 10 minutes left, I want to finish the story. And then if we get a chance, we'll have another class where we'll try to deal with it. Yeah?
Well, Moav gave already at least for once this question and answer.
What?
Moav gave... what was his name?
Boaz.
Moav gave already an answer for one of his questions.
But we're going... It's a machlokas. But we're going with the pshat throughout our learning tonight that they weren't Jewish when they married Mahlon and Chilion. There is a different understanding that says they were. But let's go... All our learning tonight, we didn't mention that understanding. So we're going to continue going with the understanding that Mahlon and Chilion married them as non-Jews. So going with that understanding, what's going on here?
Why? Well, anyway, couldn't marry anybody because his wife died. And he cannot marry straight somebody else.
Okay, so Boaz's wife died and he has to wait, according to one understanding, 3 regalim. That's one understanding. So he has Pesach and Shavuos. Okay. But we don't know. We know that if someone's wife dies and they have small children in the house, then they're allowed to get married day after Shiva, right away, after Shloshim. So we don't say that you're not allowed to get married after one's wife dies. We say that out of respect to the wife, one should wait. But if there's a mitzvah standing there, like taking care of little children, so then that comes first. So maybe over here, if we'll be able to figure out why there's a mitzvah of Yibum, so then maybe we'll also be able to figure out why that supersedes the importance of showing honor to his deceased wife and waiting. Maybe that would be the reason.
Rabbi, you said there that she wasn't, we're going with the opinion that she was not married in a Jewish fashion to
Machlon, right.
So now, if we're accepting that, then the law of Levirate marriage of Yibum does not apply.
Right.
So, if the law of Yibum does not apply, then when Boaz gives the kavod or the mitzvah to his brother Tov, which is more appropriate because he's closer, that doesn't apply either.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, that we have to say that all of these concepts do apply, and then we have to explain why. So we'll get... We won't get there tonight, but I don't know. Maybe we'll still get there. But I have a feeling that some of your classes on Shavuos night are going to deal with it. This is what I saw on the bulletin board. So, Naomi tells Ruth, put on your Shabbos clothes. And for those of you who haven't noticed, we're bringing Shabbos clothes to the Machon. We're giving out free white shirts for anyone who wants. We've been bringing, and the Mitzvah will bring more. You're supposed to have Shabbos clothes, and Shabbos clothes are supposed to be nicer clothes, white clothes. We're working on. I might even have some this week. I got a phone call. We might have bigger sizes also for everyone. So Naomi tells Ruth, put on your Shabbos clothes. When a person goes to an important meeting, he's supposed to dress nicely. You're leaving the city, you're going somewhere, dress nicely. You're going on a date, dress nicely. Here you see, Naomi tells Ruth, you're going to meet the guy, dress nicely. And Ruth goes down, and when she gets there, she puts on her beautiful clothing and her perfume and everything else. And this is ten lechacham v'echkam od. You give someone smart, they'll do one better. And that's important. Sometimes you send someone to do something, and what's called in Hebrew, rosh bakir, their head's in the wall. You tell them to do X, they do X. They don't know left, they don't know right. There's a story about the golem that the Maharal told his wife, don't ask the golem to do anything, because you won't get it right, and you're going to get havoc. And one time, it was coming close to Shabbos, she was in a rush, and there was no one there to help her, so she said, okay, I know my husband said, but once I'll try. So she went to the golem and she said, do me a favor, get water from the well. So the golem said, yes. And he got up and went to the well and drew a bucket of water, brought it to the house, poured it in the house. Went to the well, got another bucket of water in the house, and poured it in the house. And he wouldn't stop. And whatever she did, she couldn't get him to stop. So she had to run and call her husband and say, hey, he's getting the whole house flooded. He's just pouring more and more water into the house. So sometimes we can't be a golem. Always we can't be a golem. If someone gives us instructions, we have to try and think what does the person want and see how to do it in the best possible fashion. So Boaz eats, Boaz drinks, and Boaz sits down to learn. And he makes his bracha rishona, and he makes his bracha achrona, and he davens his ma'ariv, and he davens, and he makes a bracha to Hashem, thanking Hashem that Hashem accepted his tefillah that the famine should leave Am Yisrael, because the famine has left, as we just saw. They have a harvest. Naomi and Ruth coming back because the famine has left, and we have a tradition. It left primarily due to Boaz's prayers. So now Boaz goes to lie down by the piles, and Ruth sneaks up and uncovers his feet and lies next to him. And comes the middle of the night, and Boaz awakens, and he's scared. He sees her, and there's someone there. So his initial instinct is to do what everyone would want to do, and he contains himself, and he doesn't. He takes the strength like Yosef HaTzadik, and he refuses. And he takes the strength like Paltiel ben Laish, who was given the wife of David. King Shaul took David's wife, Michal, and he put her by Paltiel, and Paltiel refused. He put a sword between the two beds and said, "You're married to David. Whoever comes near one another, the sword will kill him." And Boaz goes in their ways, and Boaz holds himself back. And then he says, "Wait a second, maybe this is a demon. Who are you? I swear, tell me. If you're human, speak up, and if you're a shade, tell me what are you?" So Rus says, "It's me, Rus, your servant. And I want you to spread your wing over me. You're the one that's supposed to redeem me." Now, this concept of spreading a wing over someone is also spreading a talis. From here we have the minhag that the Yekis spread the talis over the kala, under the chuppah. The Sfardim wear a talis. The Yekis wear a talis and then put the talis over the kala as well, like spreading a wing over her. And we find that the wing is often referred to taking in a wife. In bigapoya vo bigapoya itse, if he comes only with his wing, that's when a servant goes into servitude unmarried. And when he's married, then they're considered people who are under his wing. So Boaz tells you are blessed, that your last kindness is greater than your first kindness. You didn't go after the young men, you didn't go after the poor or the rich, you waited for me, an old man, and because I'm a relative. Now this is the concept of this Megillah. Chazal tells this Megillah does not have Isser, Heter, Tuma, Tahara. There are no halachas here. What was all this written for? The concept of Chesed. The Chesed that Rus does with her mother-in-law, Chesed that Boaz does with her. And the question is, wait a second, we learn the laws of Gerus from this Megillah. What do you mean there are no halachas here? So Rav Soloveitchik writes that is what this pasuk is teaching us. That is the Chesed. The Chesed is that she became a ger. When a person becomes a ger, he is doing Chesed. He's doing Chesed to the Jewish people, just as Rus did. That's the potential for David HaMelech. He's doing Chesed because he's bringing new strength to the Jewish people. He's doing Chesed because he's bringing himself to a better way of life. He's doing Chesed with himself. And that's the Chesed that Boaz tells her. This last Chesed that you did now to come to marry me is bigger than your first Chesed, which was the Chesed to become a ger. That's the Chesed of the whole Megillah. That when a ger becomes a ger, that's an act of Chesed. Yeah. Boaz passed away the morning after the marriage. And now he tells her, don't be scared. She sees him giving her this long speech. She's getting a little bit scared. What's going on here? She says, don't worry. Whatever you say, I'll do. I'm not giving you a speech to get out of things. You know, sometimes people compliment you. You're great, you're this, you know, they're leading up to, but I'm not going to do what you want. So Boaz tells her, I see you're scared. So I'm not trying to get out of it. I will do what you want. But I want you to know, I'm not the first in line. There's another relative who's a closer relative. Wait till the morning, and then we'll see. If he wants to, he'll do it, and if not, I'll do it. And she stays there the night, and nothing happens. And early in the morning, he gives her 6 seorim, and he tells her, go. She goes before anyone can recognize anyone else. They don't want anyone to know what happened, because nothing happened, and they don't want people to talk. And that's important. Person has to be careful that people shouldn't even talk badly about him. Person has to find favor in the eyes of God and the eyes of mankind. She comes home and her mother-in-law tells her, sit and wait. We don't go back on our word. You don't go looking for other shiduchim. You don't go do anything. He said he's going to take care of it. We sit at home and wait now because he's going to take care of it quickly. Boaz goes to court and he's sitting with the elders, and the man that they were interested in comes by and he tells them, come here. And they have 10 people present. And from here we have the concept that you need 10 people for birchas chasanim, for the blessings we make for our chasan under the chuppah. You need 10 people. That's from here, because Boaz takes 10 people. And they ask the person, do you want to redeem the field that Boaz sold? You're a relative and you have to redeem it. And he says, fine, I'll redeem it. And he says, okay, but if you're redeeming the field, you have to also take the wife, the girl, Rus. And he says, I'm scared. If I take her, the children, people are going to start speaking about my children, that I married a Moabite, my children aren't fit for the Jewish people. So Boaz says, fine, you want to give up your right, so then we're going to make a contract, we're going to make a deal, and I'm giving you my glove in exchange. Na'al could mean a shoe, na'al could also mean a glove. I'll give you my glove in exchange for this deal, and that's the kinyan of chalipin, where you can make an exchange. When you sit before your chasana, the rabbi is going to tell you, take this pen, or take this handkerchief. And what's the idea? When you take that, in taking that action of taking, you're giving over. We say in halacha, you can take something, and that constitutes a giving over. Meaning, if I want to give you all of my field, so we could say, give me your yarmulke, you give me the yarmulke. The second I take the yarmulke, I am in effect giving you my field. That's a kinyan chalipin, an exchange. That's an exchange. And that action shows that we've made the deal done. And then usually the custom is, I give you back whatever you've given me. So when the rabbi sits with you before your chuppah, he'll tell you, take my pen. And when you take that pen, you are in effect saying, I'm taking the pen, and in return I'm giving my wife to be all the things I promised her in the ksuba. That act of taking the pen, which is sometimes done before you walk to the chuppah, before when you sit down and write the ksuba, and sometimes it's done under the chuppah, depending on who the rabbi is, that's the act in which you're taking the responsibility of doing everything you sign on in the ksuba. It's not the signature, it's the act of taking the pen. And maybe the signature also has halachic weight, but the main point, the kinyan, the act, is the act of taking the pen. So we derive it from here, where Boaz told him, you take my glove, and he took his glove, and then Boaz married her, and they had a child, and Naomi brought him up, and the morning after the marriage, Boaz died. Of course, we have a lot more to say, but right now we're out of time. So, in Meretz Hashem, maybe we're going to be able to get in another class on the Megillah. I don't know yet. We'll see.